Hello, and welcome to Winter Stories, a project of the Department of English at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, the forum of Fargo-Moorhead newspaper and StoryCorps. Winter Stories is an oral history project, a growing archive of stories about life during our most challenging season, winter on the Northern Plains. If you have a winter story, large or small, funny or tough, we hope you'll get in touch. Just send an email to winterstories@cord.edu and we'll set up a recording time. Every story is important.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Winter Stories. My name is Scott Olson, and today I am talking with Jim Benjaminson. Jim is a former North Dakota Highway Patrolman for 32 years. He worked the scales, the weigh stations, as well as Border Patrol, and has some fascinating winter stories to tell. Jim, welcome. Tell me about working the scales in the wintertime.
Well, originally I was working out of Grand Forks, which was, a metropolitan area until I got sent back up north where I'm originally from. Mm-hmm. And the patrol had a way inspection station located at Joliet, or what's left of Joliet, North Dakota, a junction of Highway 5 and Interstate 29, mm-hmm. and quite literally in the middle of nowhere, especially when we had lost tourists who were thinking they were running on fumes and looking for the nearest gas station, and they would they would not be too happy when I told them that, well, it's 12 miles back to Pembina, and it's 14 miles over to Hallock, Minnesota, and it's 18 miles south to Drayton, or it's 18 miles west to Cavalier. Take your choice. And I often said if I had collected a dollar for every time I gave that message, I could have retired rich a long time ago.
Yep.
But anyway, of course, being out in the wilds of the prairie of North Dakota and our infamous blizzards, there were times when travel became impossible and people would, the scale was surrounded by these 50-foot overhead lights. And a lot of people didn't know what the facility was, but they would refer to the place as the lights. And mm-hmm. when they got caught in a storm, if they could get to the lights, they could find shelter and safety.
Right.
And one particular night, it was a Friday the 13th, no less, 1991, I believe. And it started off easily enough. They had been predicting a storm and I was working the 4 to midnight. And I went out and I relieved my supervisor and he just headed for home. He lived in Cavalier. And about an hour later, he called me and he says, well, what's it like out there? And I said, well, it's fine. Just like when you were here, overcast and nothing going on. He says, well, it's really storming here in Cavalier. Well, I was sitting there and we had a spotlight that would shine down on the scale platform. Mm-hmm. And that was usually an indication when you saw a little whiff of snow circle around that, you knew that it was starting. And sure enough, there was that little whiff of snow. And the first vehicle that pulled in was a smaller car, Canadian plates on it, young couple, and he was having overheating problems with it, so he removed the thermostat and filled up the radiator with water, and they took off for points south. I don't know where they were going, never heard from them again, so I hope that they made it. But as the storm intensified, it got really, really tough. There was zero visibility, the snow was piling up, and the people started coming in. Now, a lot of these people were strangers to the area. They were not locals. Even there were some locals there, which we'll fill into the story in a little bit here. But by about 7:30, you couldn't see your nose in front of your face, and the wind was howling. And I already had some people there, and I always had a habit of having people sign in.
Uh-huh.
Who are you and where are you from? And of course, the phones would ring off the, people looking for people that they were waiting for and wondered if they'd gotten storm stayed out there. And there was a, I could see the lights of a semi coming down the off ramp. And I could see there was a lot of vehicles following this semi. They all had their flashers on and they followed the truck in. Well, it was a truck out of Morris, Manitoba, Paul Brandt Trucking. And Paul had several sons that drove truck. And this particular night, it was Murray Brandt. Nice young man, a rather tall, heavy set individual, but very shy. Mm-hmm. And when he came in, I called him by name, and he went and he stood by the east walk-in door. And by this time, you know, space is at a premium for sitting or standing or doing anything else. And a guy came through the back door, rushed up and got into Murray's face and said, "I don't know who you are. I don't know where we are, but I want to thank you for getting us here."
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. You know, at first when he came up in the guy's face, I thought maybe there was going to be a problem, but no, this guy, he just, like I said, he didn't know where he was, but he was doggone happy to be there. And throughout the evening, I mean, people kept coming in. One gentleman came in that I recognized from Minnesota. I didn't remember his name, but my wife had bought a horse from him. He rode Tennessee walking horses, so if he hears this, he'll know that I remember him anyway.
Okay.
And we had the Cloverdale meat semi was stuck in a snowbank about 10 feet off the back door. And like I say, a lot of these people were strangers. The storm mm-hmm. started to hit around supper time, so virtually nobody had supper. And the Cloverdale driver asked me, says, "Is anybody here hungry?" And God, yeah, you know, everybody had their hand in the air. And he says, "Have you got anything to cook with?" And I said, "Yeah, we have a microwave and we have a toaster oven." I said, "But the toaster oven is broken." I said, the plug is broke off the end of it. And there was a gentleman sitting there. In fact, he was sitting in the boss's chair. And he looked at me and he says, I'm an electrician. I can fix that." And he did. Well, now we had two things to cook with. So the Cloverdale driver goes out to his semi and brings in a case of hot dogs and a case of hamburger.
Oh, my.
There were two young boys from the town that I live in, from Walhalla, who had worked the Dairy Queen here in town during the summer. They were going to college down in Wahpeton, I believe. They were on the way home. They got stuck in the storm. So they told the Cloverdale driver, "We'll do the cooking." So they fired up the toaster oven and the microwave. And I had two ladies, older ladies from Lake Winnipeg, who were en route back north. And they said, "Well, we have a couple of Domino's pizzas out in the car." So one of the guys went out and retrieved these pizzas. So we had a pizza party, we had hot dogs, we had hamburgers. But the most fun part of the story, there was a young couple there who were going together at the time. They've been married ever since, but her mother lived out in the country fairly close to the scale, and it was her mother's birthday. And she had made her mother a German chocolate birthday cake. My. Well, they weren't going to get to the farm, so we called her mother on the phone. We sang her happy birthday. And then we ate her cake. So it turned into a pretty good party. We had 71 people there.
Oh, my. And how big is the inside of the building there?
It was, I think the size was 20 by 32, something like that.
So 70 people getting very well acquainted.
We did have a finished basement.
Okay.
So people could go down there and other ones would, in the middle of the night, there were some that were crawled under desks that were trying to, you know, catch a little sleep, and every square inch was pretty well covered. We had two Coke machines, which really got to work out that night. And I should mention these two ladies from Winnipeg, Lake Winnipeg, they had a new puppy with them.
Oh,
it was a Scottish Terrier, like the one that Franklin Roosevelt had.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we had some kids there. So these ladies said, you know, we need a name for this dog. So they asked the kids to suggest a name. And of course, with its Scottish heritage, it had to have McTavish in it. So the dog was named Joliet McTavish.
Oh, very cool.
Very cool. And we also had two other dogs and a cat. So it was 71 people, two dogs and a cat. Came morning when the storm finally broke and it was very cold. There were a lot of cars that had, you know, gotten stuck in the snowbanks as they pulled into the lot out there. And so we had to call wrecker service out of Cavalier. Well, the guy comes out and he didn't check the record. He didn't have a set of booster cables with him. So I had a friend, he was a over the road trucker. He was living, he lived about 6 miles straight south of the scale, and he could get out. So he came up with a set of booster cables, and the two ladies from Lake Winnipeg kind of come into the picture again. They looked out and they said, you know, your friend is doing a lot more work than the guy on the wrecker. We have to reward him. Does he drink? I said, well, he's been known to have a, you know, a barley pop or two. Well, they snuck out to his car and he happened to notice it. He came in, he said, did those ladies put something in the back seat of the car? And I said, yeah, they left you a jug of vodka.
That's fantastic.
My electrician, when we were bringing in the food and starting to serve everybody, he whispered in my ear, he says, you know, I got a jug out in the car. And I said, I don't want to write letters. I think we better leave it there.
Yeah.
That was just one. I mean, we had many, many times, not just myself, but the entire crew that worked there. A lot of times we got people storm stayed that would spend the night and until the storm let up. And a couple of weeks later, I had 31 people, including a young couple that was, well, young couple, they were my age, they were classmates of mine. And when they left in the morning, I kind of kidded her and I said, well, after all these years, you finally spend the night with me. Got to be a little bit of a smart aleck, you know?
Yep. So it's pretty common that people will seek out the scales just because of the lights when the weather turns bad.
Yep. Like I say, most of these people were strangers. They had no idea what it was, but then for a while there was a truck stop that was located right across from the scale. And that didn't survive. It's a hefty seed plant now, but when they were there, we had a little bit of relief because people could go over there and get things to eat and also be, you know, inside and warm and safe. And so
is 71 the record?
71 is the record as far as I know. And I had the book to prove it. I even had the local doctor there.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I didn't tell anybody that he was a doctor, and we had some army cots downstairs, and he went down and crashed on one of these army cots, and I thought, well, if I need him, he's there, but thankfully we didn't need him, so.
What a cool story. I'm glad that, you know, that record hasn't been broken. that's one of the ones you want to let stay.
There was a reduction in force where the colonel at the time, well, it was a budget cut under Governor Hovind, and they needed each agency had to reduce manpower. And when the colonel looked at us, he didn't particularly care for trucks or anybody associated with them, and he just kind of pointed in our direction. Well, we survived the cuts. We had a facility at Williston and one at Fargo and the one at Joliet. And we were the heaviest traffic facilities. We had, well, that one year, I believe it was a truck count was like 163,000 trucks through there.
My Lord.
All we did was southbound traffic. We didn't monitor northbound very much. So it was a busy place.
Oh, God bless you guys for being out there. You saved 71 lives that night, and who knows how many more after that. So.
I have a real, real interesting story. There was for a while there where we had a lot of hitchhikers. And this one day, it was a February, colder than blazes, nasty wind. And there was a hitchhiker going northbound on the interstate. He was actually up on the northbound on-ramp. and he was on crutches. And I'm watching this guy. There wasn't much traffic, but I happened to look out the south window and I saw the hearse from Cavalier heading up the interstate where I knew where he was going. There was a funeral in Pembina that day. Mm-hmm. I recognized the driver, you know, from where I was. Well, this guy is, he's hobbling along on his crutches. He hears a vehicle coming. So he sticks his thumb up in the air and starts to spin around to take a look. When he saw it was a hearse, he did a complete 360, put his hand out and kept on walking. And Dreamer did not stop to offer him a ride either. So,
oh man. Oh, I love it. So, well, Jim, those are great stories. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I got a few more if you got time.
Let's go for it. Tell me another one.
Okay. Another winter story.
Yep.
In fact, it was just before Christmas. And we had a southbound semi come in, a man and a woman. And this is back in the days when we still had a payphone out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This guy comes in, gets on the payphone. And this lady is walking around and he finishes on the phone and he looks at her and he says, "Are you coming?" And I cannot repeat over this broadcast what she said to him. So he walked out to the truck, got in and put it in gear. And I thought, well, they got a lover spat going. He's going to go park at the end of the lot and make her walk out there to cool her off a little bit. No, this guy takes off and leaves her. Now, this young lady she had some mental problems. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Every time a trucker came in, she propositioned him. She kept talking to her dog, except there was no dog. And I mean, she was out of it.
Yeah.
And I could see this guy probably picked her up because if she was talking to him, like she was talking to everybody that came in the building. Well, I was working with one of the other crew that worked there and we kind of had some words with her to kind of try to calm her down. And when she pitched an item off the counter at the guy's, okay, this is it, we're calling the cops. And the sheriff's office came out, two deputies. And by the time they got there, she'd locked herself in the men's room. And well, they got her to open the door and they took her to the county jail. And they had her for several days. Well, she had no IDs on her. She wouldn't give a straight answer, but she kept talking to this dog. Well, one of the lady dispatchers, a lady by the name of Delora King, had worked at the sheriff's office for many, many years. And at that time, we were still using the old jail, you know, the old movie type where the bars go down to the floor. And well, this lady was in a cell and she babbled to herself even when no one was there. So Delora snuck up into an adjoining cell without her knowing it and sat there and listened to her and wrote down things that she was saying. And eventually they put it together that she was an escapee from a mental institution in the state of Iowa.
Oh my.
Yeah. So we had different, we had one hitchhiker that I caught him going through the vehicles and well, he was wanted in the state of California, but they weren't about to extradite him from North Dakota. And so we had a lot of interesting individuals, shall we say.
I can imagine.
Yeah. But all of the excitement didn't happen just during the snowstorms. It was a late fall day. In fact, it was about 94, 95 degrees with about a 40 mile an hour wind. And my supervisor and I were working together. And a person came in and said, there's a motor coach that has gone off the road just up the highway a ways, up by the actual village of Joliet. And of course, my first question was, you know, are there any injuries or anything? And well, a person didn't know. They just saw this coach in the weeds. So I told my super, I said, I better go out and check this out. Well, as it turned out, it was a tour bus out of Northfield, Minnesota. I remember Northfield because when I was talking to the people on the bus, one of my classmates had moved to Northfield and they knew this individual.
Okay.
small world. I got up there and all these people are milling. Now, the bus blew a right front steering tire at 70 miles an hour. Old time driver, a lot of experience, and he managed, he said, I kept it on the road as long as I could. He said, but I knew I had to take it in the ditch or I was going to lose it. I was going to roll it. And he picked a spot that was kind of swampy. In fact, the cattails almost were as tall as the bus was high. But when I got there, all these people are out walking around on the interstate. And my first thing was, I got to get these people off the road because somebody's right. coming along. They're not going to pay attention and I'm going to have road pizza out here.
Yeah.
So I got all of these people. They were all over the age of 70 or 75. Except for the tour director's grandson. He'd brought his grandson along and he was 12 years old. So I started calling around. I called the sheriff's office. Nope, they didn't have anybody to come out. I called the highway patrol office in Grand Forks. At that time of day, there was one trooper that was on duty and he was on a long distance phone call giving a deposition. So I'm out there all by myself. And I'm going, what am I going to do with these people? You know, the bus has got a blown tire. There's some damage on the bus. It's laying down in the weeds. So I called the school up at Pembina, which is about, 17 miles north. And not 12 miles north, I'm sorry. And they sent out a school bus and picked up these people and at least took them into the truck stop at Pembina. So finally, the guy from Grand Forks came up, and of course, he was the one that got to do all the paperwork. And but at least we got the people taken care of. So
that is very, I would not have imagined, although it makes perfect sense, that a way station, that a scale would be such a center of activity and and drama. That's pretty cool.
We had an incident, another winter incident when it was really, really icy. And this was always a bone of contention with us that we would call, of course, we had no authority to shut down the road.
Right.
We had to call Grand Forks and Grand Forks had to talk to so and so on. But it was so extremely icy. And this day I had two yellow freight trucks pulling double trailers. And they slid their way into the scale. And I said, okay, guys, this is it. I said, you got to drop one trailer. And they were just, well, like I told a lot of people, I thought they were going to come over the counter and kiss me. They were so happy when I shut them down. And of course, they called their company. And the next thing I'm on the phone with somebody from Yellow Freight. And he's just ragging me about shutting down these trucks. And I said to him, well, I said, where are you at? And he gives me a smart ass answer. Where do you think I'm at? I'm in my office. Okay, you're in your office, but where is your office? Chicago, Illinois. I said, well, what's the weather like in Chicago, Illinois? He said, well, I don't know. I don't have a window. I said, well, I do. And yeah. I says, your trucks are shut down. Well, they filed a complaint on me and I got my backside chewed up because I didn't have authority to shut down doubles. Legally, I could shut down triples, but I can't shut down doubles. And I said, I don't care. I'm more worried about the safety of people on the road. These guys were shut down. And I said, the drivers were happier than heck when I shut them off. And so.
Oh, very, very, very cool. Jim, I'm sure we could tell 1,000 more stories, but that's about the time we've got. This is really cool stuff. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for asking me to do this. So one final story.
Okay, go for it.
Summertime.
Okay.
I got two deputies that drive into the lot. They're at the far end of the lot. You know, each one facing window to each other. And well, we're out, like I say, we've been out in the wilds, been trying to grow trees. We had one decent tree. And these two guys, a beautiful summer night, no wind, nothing like that. They're sitting talking to each other, and this tree falls down dead center between the two patrol cars. Never touches a thing. I mean, it doesn't even take off a mirror or anything like that. And they get out to see what the heck is going on. there was a doggone beaver out there that cut down this tree as they were sitting there talking.
a beaver with a good sense of name.
And the beaver come along and cut them off. So
yeah, very cool. Okay, anyway. Sir, thank you.